I am Rabbi Lily Kaufman, director of the Torah Fund campaign of Women's League for Conservative Judaism, and today's parasha is Behalotecha. In my family, we are not the retiring type, although we do tend towards shyness. What I mean is that we tend to work until we can't. We love to work. When I noticed that Parashat Behalotecha features an idea about the boundaries of the productive work life of the ancient Levites, it got me wondering about current work and retirement trends in America. In an article in The Gerontologist, a publication of Oxford University Press, article titled Retirement Patterns and the Macroeconomy in 1992 to 2010 by Cahill, Jandria, and Quinn, I learned that traditional one-time permanent exits from the labor force continue to be the exception rather than the rule, and the retirement patterns of the early boomers, those on the cusp of retirement during the Great Recession, appear to be diverging from those of earlier cohorts. The early boomer women in particular were more likely than those in previous cohorts to move to a bridge job prior to exiting the labor force completely. And both early boomer men and women were more likely to leave their jobs involuntarily, with layoffs being a key factor. Parashat Behalotecha goes into some detail about the Levitical bridge job. From the age of 25 years until 50, a Levite is in the active phase of his career. He participates in Avodat Ohel Moed, the service of the Tent of Meeting. At 50 years of age, he must sheiret et echav, attend to his brothers. He may no longer lift and carry the heavy sacred objects of the tabernacle, a physically demanding and spiritually dangerous job. Instead, he stands guard over the sanctuary. Avodah, serving God, is only for the Levites in their prime. Sheirut, attending to one's brothers, is for Levites who are semi-retired. Rashi and Ramban are divided as to whether the older Levites still sing as they stood guard. Rashi says they did. The Levite, who never retires, Moses, performs a kind of work for which the rules about retirement are especially unclear, political leadership. He demonstrates his exceptional gift for leadership in Behalotecha in chapter 11 of Numbers. When the Israelites, Eldad and Medad, begin prophesying to the people of Israel. Joshua, Moses' protege and eventual successor, eagerly seeks to have the two men detained for defying Moses' authority, but Moses declines to have them stopped or censored in any way, saying, "Hamekaneh atali, are you wrought up on my account? Would that all the Lord's people were prophets, that the Lord put his spirit upon them." Joshua the Na'ar, the rising young leader from the tribe of Ephraim, feels any slight to his master more acutely than Moses does. But Moses is a leader secure enough in his own ego to share power with Israelites. Joshua has missed something fundamental about Moses. Moses' leadership arises from his compassion, his outrage about oppression, and most of all, from his deep identification with his people. These qualities were first provoked to action by the sight of an Egyptian taskmaster beating an Israelite slave in Exodus chapter 2, verses 11 to 15. In the brief Eldad-Medad episode, Joshua's loyalty to Moses and his lack of Moses' exceptionally generous wisdom are told simultaneously. It is perhaps this magnanimity that God so cherishes in Moses. God's high regard for Moses is stated forcefully at the end of this week's parasha. There God rebukes Moses' older siblings, Miriam and Aaron, for gossiping about their younger brother. God calls Moses Avdi Moshe, my servant Moses, twice in this speech, using the term for the active Levite. Shim'una divarai, hear these my words. When a prophet of the Lord arises among you, I make myself known to him in a vision. I speak to him in a dream. Lochein avdi Moshe. Not so with my servant Moses. He is trusted throughout my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, plainly, and not in riddles, and he beholds the likeness of the Lord. How then did you not become terrified from speaking against Avdi Moshe, my servant Moses? Why is God so outraged on Moses' behalf? Because Miriam and Aaron are older Levite siblings and seasoned leaders in their own right. By speaking ill of Moses, they have failed to be, in the broadest sense, misharet et echav, attendants to their tribal brother, who is in fact their actual brother. It is so much easier to serve a brother who is a social construct than an actual one. Unlike Miriam and Aaron, for most of his life, Joshua succeeds at being misharet Moshe, as noted in our parasha and in the opening words of the book of Joshua. And it came to pass after the death of Moses, Eved Adonai, servant of God, that Adonai said to Joshua, son of Nun, misharet Moshe, Moses' attendant, saying, Joshua is still misharet Moshe after Moses has died, and Moses is still Eved Adonai. Joshua only acquires the name Eved Adonai upon his own death in chapter 24. Joshua begins life as a misharet and ends it as an Eved, the reverse of the Levitical path. He progresses from peripheral engagement in sacred work to more intimate connection to God. But Moses is always Eved Adonai, always held near by God. He does not show change in this regard in the manner of most Levites nor his Ephraimite successor. During his lifetime, Moses knew no official retirement age and possessed a spiritual gift which cannot be captured in a job description, not even that of a Levite. Moses was so unusual. What can most people learn from him in regard to work? We can think about the name we earn in the workplace and about the quality and purpose of the work itself, whether we do it full-time, part-time, or in semi-retirement. We can see our work as making a contribution to the world and consider how we are of service. And we can look for occasions to practice generosity of spirit in our work, which is to say, in our lives. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, the one day each week when we fully retire from our work.